everyone, and welcome to episode 589 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I'm running on fumes. I stayed up all night playing Slay the Spire 2. I may have sacrificed some sleep to get some time to play.
I got to ask you, Richard, because I've been playing that game a little bit. So we did a video together, like a team game for a Patreon video, but I've been playing a little for fun too. Do you feel like the game is like super easy?
So the Patreon video coming up Wednesday, check that out, where it's me, Seth, Niatuk and Tomer, and we're playing it for the first time, essentially, except Niatuk. He knows what he's doing. So my takeaway from that was multiplayer, super easy. Single player, because I never played Slay the Spire 1, I spent, I don't know how many runs, 10, 15, 20 runs, like getting dunked on, getting absolutely nowhere. And I'm like, is this a Souls game? Like, why is this so ridiculously hard? How do people enjoy this crap? But then it clicked. Like, once I figured out how the game is actually played, because counterintuitively, it has nothing to do with cards, really, right? So once you figure out how to play, it was easy climbing up the Ascension levels. Then I beat the Ascension 10 on Ironclad, so the highest one. And it was like pretty much smooth sailing all the way up. Once I got over that initial hurdle of like getting smacked around left and right. So it was incredibly difficult for me. And then I don't know. There was no increase in challenge, really. Like, it only got slightly harder, but like once it clicked, it kind of just all clicked, and then we're able to go up. So I don't know.
I think it partly might be too that I went through that with Slay the Spire 1. So I already like went through the process of kind of like learning how to play the game. So then 2 felt like just like one with some upgrades. So it felt kind of intuitive. But anyway, that's not a Slay the Spire podcast. We got another co-hosted, Krim. Have you been Slaying the Spire 2 in Krim?
No. But I have played the board game.
Game of Slay the Spire?
There's a board game?
Really?
Yeah, huh. It's super awesome.
I didn't even know that.
What's funny though is I played the board game before I played the actual game. So I don't actually know what the normal game is like. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I love board games, though, so that I'm not surprised.
It's like Magic the Gathering, Krim. The cards don't matter, but money does.
Okay.
No, it's not pay to win. It's just all the things around the cards are more important than the cards themselves somehow. It's like strange. It's a weird setup for the premise of being a deck builder roguelike game.
Anyway, so this week, along with Slay the Spire 2, we are talking some arena news with the upcoming Marvel set. We have some drama with the Goblin Seeker Lair drop. There's a new style of draft coming to Magic Arena we wanted to talk about. There's some Hasbro earning news. There's some alchemy stuff. We have some William Shatner weighing in on his upcoming Magic card, and so much more. So we're going to be jumping around this week. Before we get to all that, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service via sending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service via list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. The new Art Masters series playmat from Jim Pavlik just released, featuring angels, demons, djinns, dragons, and more. Their unique folding design lets you fit them in a standard laptop bag, and EquipMag lets you attach optional dice boxes or even multiple playmats together. So check out the new Art Masters series playmats from Jim Pavlik at heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish, or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with the biggest news of the week, and some actually oddly very exciting news. So out of the blue, Wizards posted an article a few days ago saying Marvel Superheroes comes to MTG Arena. So you might be thinking, wait, why is that even an article? Don't all sets come to Magic Arena? And the answer to that is not exactly. So as we saw with Spider-Man last fall, Wizards did not have the rights to use the Marvel IP in digital. So that's how we ended up with Through the Omen Pass and some classics like Fleam and like just like these weird magic versions of all the Spider-Man cards. But whatever problem they had there, it seems to be fixed in starting with Marvel Superheroes next month. We're getting all the Marvel sets on Magic Arena, and they're even going to go back and add in the Spider-Man cards with the Marvel IP to Magic Arena. So, Richard and Grim, what do you think of this, and how big of a deal is this? Like, this has to matter, right, in the grand scheme of things? This was one of the worst parts of Spider-Man, and they kind of fixed it.
God. Okay, this is good, because then we don't have to do two spoiler seasons, right?
Yes. Good Lord.
I see every commentator, you know, in the game, like, oh, okay, I can actually now, like, study this set, and I'm good, right? So that's pretty cool. And now, you know, the people who are going to hate Marvel, they've already hated Marvel. This doesn't change anything, right? But the one thing here is, for those that do like Marvel, I can actually play with it now on Arena, which is very fun for me. And then I cannot wait to, like, maybe see what kind of pet or sleeves or, I don't know, whatever they're going to put on Arena. So I'm really excited to play with these actual Marvel cards and not Cavero or whatever the hell his name is, or Belion the Parched.
Fleam.
Okay, Fleam can stay. Fleam
can
stay.
If you really like the Through the Omen Path versions of Spider-Man, you can still play those cards. That set, both is going to continue to exist. They're just going to give you all the Spider-Man versions on top of what you already own. But for future sets, it'll just be one IP. There'll be no Through the Omen Path. Richard, I know you're kind of excited about this, right? Like, I know you complained a lot about the Spider-Man thing and how weird it was. This is a good thing, right?
Oh, thank God Marvel Snap is dying. So that's the speculation, right? The speculation. So
yeah,
no one knows for sure what happened, but the speculation was Marvel Snap had some exclusive license and their numbers aren't doing so good. So when it came time to renew the exclusivity, you know, Marvel's like, nah, and then gave it to WotC, or, you know, Wizards gave WotC the secret lair money. Gave Marvel the secret lair money, and Marvel's like, wait a minute. You guys are just printing money over here. Get in on that, right? And then maybe Wizards actually has the leverage that they claim to have over all the other IPs, and they were able to get it. But, oh my God, like, because we have several Marvel sets coming down the pipeline, if they were through the Omen paths, like, Arena was cooked. Magic was cooked, right? And
yeah,
there was no way they were going to let this happen. So they probably were pretty convinced from the beginning they could actually manage to get this through. They probably just weren't 100% sure that they could get it done. But it saves everything. And I know there's a lot of Universes Beyond haters out there. And I'm just going to say anecdotally, as I play Arena and I draft and stuff like that, I see a shockingly high number of Turtles avatars. Okay, for
yes, there
for,
are
for the proclaimed hate about Ninja Turtles. Like, these are people that went out of their way and changed their avatar to Ninja Turtles. Right, I see so many, and I'm like, are we sure we hate Universes Beyond and we hate Turtles? Like, because I'm obviously rocking my Raphael, right? But I run into another one. I'm like, huh.
I'm already in my Raphael,
right?
By the way.
So I think this is great news, right? And now it's going to be like Wolverine. Okay, I hope they have all of them. So they did get Spider-Man. Spider-Man is like special IP, but I think it's only for movies, though. I don't know. Like, Marvel IP is weird. Like certain franchises are excluded from other things. We'll see if we get the full suite, but it sounds like everything is coming, and I'm excited. Wolverine avatar, Wolverine emotes.
Yeah. Doctor Strange avatar,
right?
Is what you meant to say, but yeah, sure.
I mean, we know we're getting Spider-Man avatars. They actually said that in the announcement. So if you want a Spider-Man avatar June 16th, you're going to be able to get it. So
how will I know I play this Dabir Excruciator now if they don't play Cavero or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Superior Spider-Man.
Spider-Man time. I got to say, though, I'm surprised they're giving us the copy of Spider-Man in universe.
What's the same? Like, imagine if they made you pay for the Spider-Man.
You do not want to see what the internet would have been.
Yeah,
that
would have been
the
internet. Would have been.
I mean, it does make me a little salty, because I was running under the assumption that it was literally impossible for them to get the IP to the Marvel sets because of how Spider-Man went, because it was like such a horrible thing. And everyone had to know, like, going into it, that it would be horrible to have two versions of each cards. So seeing this announcement, it does make me think, like, wait, does this mean they just were being like cheap and didn't want to pay for Spider-Man? And we went through all of this disaster for like half a year. And now they were like, oh, maybe we should actually pay. And I'm like, duh, you should have just paid, you idiots. Like, Like, of course this is what's going to happen.
100% a possibility, but there's also the possibility that I think maybe contracts or something, some kind of agreement was held up, right? And they just needed a stopgap for a little bit until eventually. Because what would have happened, right? Like, there's no way. Like, maybe there is just, they don't want to spend the extra, $20 or something, right, for the insurance.
It's gotta be exclusive. Like, Marvel IP can't be that expensive. Like, you go to Target, everything is branded. Like, slippers, apples, crackers, anything you think is, Marvel branded. So I can't imagine it's that expensive, unless it's we only give digital rights to one person. And if you want us to do a second person, it's crazy expensive, but... I don't know. I'm glad Papa Hasbro got it done. Well done, suits. We're gonna cheer up the backroom suits that we always bash on. Although I guess
I thought you were gonna say the movie Beyond.
This is bad news for you. So maybe you shouldn't be cheering it
on. Yeah. I don't think you.
But I mean, it's gotta be
cheering.
Better than Omen Pass, right? Like, I know there was a lot of cope when Omen Pass came out. Like, oh yeah, I enjoy, the flavor of Omen Pass. But it was so bad. We can't do that. Even if you are a UB hater. We can't be having Omen Paths, right?
I think that then becomes a half measure, right? It's just like, I think you either full Marvel it up or you don't, right? It's just that simple. Yes.
Yeah, it was disastrous. Like, it was really, really bad the way that they did it before. So I think that, even if you are a UB hater, this has to be better, right? I know you might not looking at the art or whatever, but it's still got to be better than having two different names and two different arts on the cards, which was just, one of the worst things that Wizards has ever done in my book. Like, it does not get worse than that. I do wonder, remember how everyone made videos complaining about Spider-Man in general, but this was one of the biggest complaints was the Through the Omen Pass stuff? Do you think
this
all of our salty videos last summer played a role in this at all? Like, do you think that had any influence that everyone in unison came out and was like, dude, you really got to fix this? Or do you think it's completely unrelated and it was just noise?
Maybe it's just all unrelated and it's noise, but I have to imagine that if you're already going to upset people with Spider-Man, then you may as well make the people that like it happy so that at least somebody cares.
At least someone's happy,
Yeah, make somebody happy if you're going to do this. So,
No one was happy about Omen Pass situation. No. I guess the people that wanted UB to fail, they're like, hey, Omen Pass, such a disaster. It'll fail UB altogether. But, Marvel fans were not happy about Omen Pass. Like, UB haters in general were not happy about Omen Pass. So I'm pretty sure Wizards knew it was a bad idea. And I'm pretty sure the feedback just made sense to them. They're like, yeah, we knew it was kind of bad. And here it is. So it did help. But I don't think it, changed their opinion. But I guess there is a world where everyone just swept it under the rug and they continued the merry way. And that didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, it probably didn't have a big impact. But I could imagine, maybe it's something you can bring to the suits, right? And be like, dude, look at, literally our entire community, Marvel.
Stop giving
power crashing
to the
angry mobs. maybe we should actually do something about this. Because
we should have signed a petition. We should have filed a lawsuit.
I got to say also, you mentioned that Marvel's on everything at Target. I tried the Avengers Oreos. And so when you lick the frosting, it turns from white to green. Let me just say, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Does it work?
It does work, but at what cost is what I will say.
Is your tongue
and
green afterwards?
Without getting into specifics, I will say that it does turn everything green.
What? Didn't we run into this with Doctor Strange Oreos when we were in Vegas or something that Tomer wanted to get for you? Your tolerance level, Krim, for eating weird Oreos is incredibly high. Like, you've never seen an Oreo you will not try.
I do love Oreos, though. That's why. But specifically, this is no flavor upgrade or anything. This is just, it's going to turn green. And I will say that everything turns green. Everything.
Anyway. Shout out to Wizards for actually fixing a really big issue with the Spider-Man set. So I think this is going to make the Marvel set way better. I couldn't imagine being a new player who started playing Magic because of Spider-Man and be like, oh, I'm going to go play some Arena and try out these cool Spider-Man cards. And then just being smacked by Through the Omen Pass. It defeats the whole purpose. So well done, Wizards, on this one. Although, not all the problems in the multiverse are fixed, because our next topic, we had a new secret lair drop, the Goblin Commander deck secret lair drop that people were very excited for, and it went the way that most secret lair drops go, which means it sold out in like 30 minutes with a bunch of people having it in their carts. When it suddenly became their turn to check out, they told them they couldn't get it because it was all gone. But what made this one unique is the artist of the secret lair drop, Wizards of the Barge, was very upset because he was like, this whole deck was promoted about me. I did everything I could to prioritize my fan base. They were all going to get into Magic because of this deck. And even I couldn't get a deck. They said Wizard sent me a single deck. So I wanted to try to buy another one because I wanted more than one. And I was sitting in the checkout and then it disappeared from my cart and they said it was all gone. So he actually went a step further and he posted that people should bootleg the entire deck rather than pay these scalpers where the deck was selling for 5 times the price. Although he later backed down and had another post where he said, really, maybe you should just wait for the prices to drop and then buy from the scalpers instead of printing the whole decks yourself. So what do we make of the secret lair situation? And does Wizards just want this to happen or not care that, like, they must know this is going to happen and they don't care or think it's worth it, or they like the prestige of it selling out, like, because it doesn't seem like a problem that they're trying to fix. But what do you make of the Goblin secret lair drop situation?
I mean, I like Wizard of Barge at this point. Their art is phenomenal, right? It's become a household name within Magic itself. So you have to imagine that this is going to be something that would be very popular. But I think they are accounting for that, and everything is working as intended, right? Like, I think this is maybe they did increase the number of Goblin decks that were, you know, like, you know, product to be made, but it wasn't enough. I think you knew this wasn't going to be enough. And like in the TCG culture nowadays, between every card game, you want to tout about the things that you've made that are now sold out, right? Like, so this is unfortunately just the nature of the entire world moving towards collectible culture.
What do you think, Richard?
I don't think so. I think Wizards, okay, I think it's impossible to predict this demand. And Wizards does want everything to sell out, but they wanted it to sell out like kind of like at the last moment, right? Not like days after that, but like at least like a good day, then it sells out, because they're just leaving all this money on the table when it sells out instantly. So my guess is it's a printer capacity issue. They don't have enough capacity to print enough or to print on demand. That would be my guess, right? Because if I was WotC, I'm like, look at all this money we're leaving on the table. Like, people want to buy it, but they can't. And we want to sell out, but not in like 3 seconds, right? Like, that's not the right metric, right? So I think it's probably a capacity issue. Like every other new TCG where you're like, well, why don't they just make more, right? And the answer is, well, there's no capacity, right? Like, they can't make more, or they can't predict the demand correctly. Like, maybe this set just like sold out, but then the next set is just like rotting on shelves, right? So they're unable to predict the demand correctly. Given that Wizards has done this for like 8,000 years and they've done like a ton of secret lairs, I'm going to say it's a capacity issue, but we don't really know. But maybe only certain printers can do like secret lairs and those are like booked, right? Because another easy model is print on demand. Like, why don't they just do print on demand, right? And there's no print on demand if you have no printer capacity, right? So maybe that's the issue, because it's all this free money. Why would they want this? Like, it seems to me like they don't want this really.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you would want to sell out after like a day or something, like. But you don't want to sell out after a half hour,
like,
when there's
hours,
a bunch of angry people,
2 hours, like anything,
that are waiting,
right?
Like, in
any
line.
Metric
but
is better than like instantly, right?
But not why there's a bunch of people getting salty and waiting in line, because then not only is that angering people, but it's also costing them money, right? They could have sold more. There was higher demand than the supply existed, so they could have sold more of them if they had printed more of them. I know I read it, and I can't find the source on this at the moment, but I remember reading, it was Mero or Aaron, one of the big WotC people, talking about how they have to, like, get stuff from the printers like 8 months or something ahead of time. Like, there's this really long lag time for actually getting something printed because it's just so booked out there. So I think Richard might be right that's at least part of the problem, is it's not that easy for them to just print more. Do you think, with this negative response from Wizards of the Barge, which 1,000,000% cannot blame them for, like, they put a lot of work into this, they thought it was going to get copies for all their fans or whatever, it didn't work out that way. Is there any risk that, like, having supply be so low ends up hurting Secret Lairs in the long run, because artists are going to be like, I don't want to be part. I don't want my name on this. Like, it's going to sell out. I mean, it's going to be a lot of people yelling at me because they can't get the cards that I did the art for. Like, it's just not worth it for me to do a Secret Lair drop if this is a sales model. Like, do you think that is something that could happen based on this response we're seeing from Wizards of the Barge?
Can you really see people being mad at Wizard of the Barge and not Wizards? Because I don't think that.
I mean, their names are kind of similar. You got Wizards of Barge. Okay, so
maybe in that exact situation,
yeah.
Sure. But like, for the most part, I have to imagine we could like split the, you know, understand which half of which, you know, party this problem falls on, right? So like, I see it as an upside if you're the artist outside of, yeah, like at least it shows that there's a lot of demand for your work, which then would mean that you get more like drops, more things, more, you know, whatever, more collaborations for your art. So I don't know. I think it has to be a positive for one. And then really it just shows the, you know, the whole Secret Lair problem.
Yeah.
I think some people will not like it. Like, let's say they drew this art, and the idea was that it's going to be in the hands of millions of people, and then at the end of the day, it's in the hands of hundreds of people, right? I can see why you're not happy about that, right? And I can see why some people would, you know, pass on this opportunity. But I don't know, Wizards, like, I think there's no shortage of collabs and artists and whatever that Wizards could choose from. So I think Wizards has all the power here. Right, like, so I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I feel like you should, like, I don't know. I really hate it when people, like, do stuff like this. I think Wizards of the Barge, well, they're never going to get another WotC collab, right? Like, when you work together on a project and then you just, like, publicly, like, shame them, you're like, well, why didn't you ask these questions before you signed the contract, right? And, like, you know what I mean? Like, why didn't this stuff happen, right? So it seems like we're never going to see Wizards of the Barge collab ever again, right? Which sucks even further if you're a fan of them, right? Like, it's kind of, like, burnt all the bridges. So that is a weird choice, especially since it's not going to fix anything. It's not like if they make this, like, uprising, like, Wizards will just magically print random things, right? So
He did say that he reached out to his best contacts at Wizards and asked them to print more. He didn't expect it to work, but he tried, so he gave it.
This is what happens when a non-TCG native enters our world. Like, Wizards, have you thought about lowering the price? Have you thought about printing more? Have you thought about fixing your queuing system? Right?
So, final question about this. This happens all the time, right? Every time there's a big Secret Lair drop, it sells out quickly. We talk about it on the podcast. Should we just stop talking about it? Like, are we at the point where we just have to accept that this is what Secret Lairs are and they're going to sell out in 15 minutes and a lot of people are not going to get them? And that's just, it is what it is and it sucks, but that's how it is, and stop talking about it every time it happens. Because it happens like once a month or something at this point, or every other month.
I think it's still good to talk about it, right? I think it's still worth discussing, right? Because, I mean, they do listen to community feedback. They've already shown that. Yeah. Whether it gets through every time, you know what I mean? That's a different story.
Right.
Oh, I'm such a WotC shill today. If we do that, why don't we talk about all the secret rares rotting on the shelf? The ones that don't sell out. Right? To get perspective of how hard it is to forecast the right demand for this. Like, there are plenty of Secret Lairs that just sit around forever and, like, they're not selling out. And WotC also screwed up on those ones, right? They don't want that happening either. So I think Wizards is in a rough spot. I think we should expect it to happen. But they also have a lot of failures in Secret Lairs too, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We don't talk and complain about them in the same manner either, but you can see the difficult predicament that Wizards is in, right? They just cannot predict this. Like, how are they going to know this one's going to pop off? This IP is actually hated by the crowd, but this IP is beloved, right? Like, how can they, like, predict all of this? And yeah, and then obviously one mistake snowballs into the next, right? Oh, if you thought this Marvel Secret Lair would do super well and you used all your capacity and then you didn't save enough for Wizards of the Barge, and then Wizards of the Barge actually oversold, but then Marvel underperformed, right? Now you look super dumb and you also screwed up your whole year's worth of printing, right? So
yeah,
I don't know. It is going to keep happening, though. I think just due to the nature of it.
I mean, it is a fair point that this doesn't happen with all of them. I'm looking at the Secret Lair website right now, and there's like probably 20 Secret Lair drops. Some of them going back like a year, maybe, like back to when they did like the PlayStation Secret Lair drops, or like Furby, which I think was like a long time ago, that you can still get today if you want them. Like, they still exist. Fallout's still there, some of them. So there's some Turtle ones, some Secrets of Strixhaven. I think it's the decks are the worst. Like, when they do the decks, I don't, maybe there's a better system for decks. Like, maybe you give some of the decks to LGSs too and have it be like hybrid, like you do a Secret Lair sale, but also get some to the LGSs to sell or something. Because it seems like that is every single time been a problem. Whenever they do a Commander deck, this is going to happen. At least so far, every single one this has happened with. But with normal Secret Lair drops, you are right that they don't all happen. And I guess it does show how hard it can be to estimate demand, because they definitely don't want the PlayStation Secret Lair drops still sitting on the shelf, whatever, 6 months, a year, however long it's been after they released it. So that's not good for them either. But anyway, let us know. Did you get one of the Secret Lair drops? How was it? How was your experience? Let us know what you think in the comments. Anyway, let's move on. Richard, we have a new draft. What is the word for this? It's not format. New draft style? New draft? I don't
event.
Know. A new way to...
Event.
A new draft event. Let's go with event. That's a very easy word. A new draft event on Magic Arena. It's called Contender Drafts. Richard, you're a drafter. What is this Contender Draft thing about?
All right. So Wizards announced like high stakes drafting a while ago where the cost is more, but the rewards are greater if you trophy. But if you scrub out, it's like more dire. You get nothing, right? For two or less wins. And they called it Contender Draft. And people calculated the EV, right? And the EV is actually higher than Premier Draft, right? But everyone's initial impression was like, well, you're just going to play with all the content creator sharks and then get destroyed. So, like, your win rate in reality is going to be a lot less when you play Contender Draft. But it came out this weekend that it's the same pool as Premier Draft. So when you queue up in Contender Draft or Premier Draft, you're playing the same people, right? So this is actually just high-end Premier Draft. You're not just playing against like top-end people. You're playing against everyone. It turns out that you only need a 60% win rate to go infinite in Contender Draft versus 65% if you go Premier. These are still very insanely high numbers. But the difference is now you can play Joe Schmo in bronze or whatever, and you're not just playing like top streamer 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. So kind of interesting news, and it opens up this Contender Draft format to basically everyone, right? You can go infinite much more easily in Contender Draft now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the upside, right? If you are good at drafting, it is much more realistic to go infinite doing the Contender Drafts, although it's still a very high win rate. Like, a 61%, 60%, 65%, those numbers don't sound that high. But when it comes to Magic, like, you have to consider that literally some of the best players in the history of the game, their win rates are 65, 67, 68, like 70% might be the absolute cap. So Magic just has a lot of variance in it, right? So it's not easy to win 62 or 65% of the time. But this is a way easier way to go infinite if you are a high win rate drafter. So that part's nice. The draft itself, you'll draft with strong players, I assume, like the actual. So the pod will be all people. Am I understanding this right, Richard? When you sit down to a draft pod, you will draft against other people in a Contender Draft. But then when you
no
play
idea.
The games, it'll be against the broader pool of everyone in Premier Drafts. Or maybe
no
they
idea.
Just take
we
more
know for
of your
sure
money.
The games. We know yes. the games are actually. I don't even know if when you're drafting, are you even drafting within your own rank? Like, you must be, right? Like, I don't even
you
know. Like,
think.
If you're in Mythic and you sit at a draft, is, like, everyone around Mythic in the actual, like, draft pod? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. Yeah.
So that part is unknown because, I don't do Premier Draft anymore, so I don't know.
The one thing I will complain about this, so the way the prizes work with this, you talked about it a little bit. If you get two or less wins, you get no prizes. You got to get 4 wins to get your entry fee back. And then at 5, 6, or 7 wins especially, you get huge prizes. 7 wins, you get 7,200 gems. So you more than double up your entry fee, and you get 10 Mythic packs. I believe this is the first time they've handed out Mythic packs as like the prize packs for a draft. And the Mythic packs better than normal packs because they're all Mythics, which are more expensive. But the one thing I kind of dislike about this, I'm curious what you think, Richard, as someone who drafts a lot, Do you dislike that so much of the prize is tied up in booster packs? Like, would it be better if your reward was basically just gems? Because the awkward part about drafting a lot is if you're also not a constructed player, you end up with all these cards for constructed that don't do much when what you really want is more gems to play the next draft. If you're doing both, it's great. Like, for me, drafting a ton is great because it saves me money on buying the packs to play constructed. But I almost wish you got less packs and just more gems, and gems was like the primary payout for these. Like, do you think that would make it better, Richard?
I'm pretty sure whenever anyone does any EV calculation, they count packs as zero. However,
yeah,
the mythic packs mean something. Wait, is a mythic pack 15 mythics? No way, right? What is a mythic pack? Because if you draft a lot, you will complete your entire collection. And then afterwards, the rares and mythics are free money, right? Like, they're gems. So if you're actually getting packs of 15 mythics, that's insane, right?
You're guaranteed. No. The difference with a mythic pack is your rare slot will always have a mythic. So it's a normal pack, but you always get a mythic and no rares. Yeah.
Yeah, but you will complete your collection I don't know. Sometimes, okay, this is weird. Okay, there was a point in time where when I got to mythic, I would have my collection completed, essentially, right? But with turtles, Secrets of Strixhaven, I was so efficient that I got to mythic before completing any semblance of my collection. Like, I got there too fast, all right? But in general, usually, if you draft a lot every day, you still rare draft because that's just free gems every single time you find it, right? And you will complete your collection over time. So the packs are worth something, but all EV calculations count them as zero. Like, if you count them as, like, 100 gold or... Was it 100 gold? I forgot how much packs are in the store. I'm sure these things are like crazy EV, right? But like, no one actually counts it like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because they're just like, if you're a pure drafter, then the packs don't have that much value to you. It's not like Magic Online where you can like use your packs to enter the draft as part of your entry fee. It doesn't work that way on Arena.
So good. That was one so other, good.
yeah, I wish they could. I wish they would do that. That made it so much easier to go infinite.
You can still draft on Modo. It's still a thing. And the EV is much higher over there.
Yeah, but
allegedly.
The problem is what everyone was afraid would happen with these contender drafts. That is Magic Online. That the only people that are still there drafting are just like the Ben Starks of the world that have been doing it for 20 years and the best limited players in the world. And they're trying to practice for a pro tour and play with their pod. Yeah, yeah. So you're just playing against like the most hard mode drafts. But yeah, they still are there. I am curious, one other question on this. I'm fine with this. Like, I don't know, will you play these, Richard? Like, do you think, looking at the numbers and the math, like, is this going to be your choice? I wish I saw some comparisons to pick two draft, because all the comparisons I've seen are to premier draft. But are you going to start playing these, you think?
I'll try it. Okay, so not in mythic, no chance, right? But so my preferred format is pick two. So I actually only played pick two for Secrets of Strixhaven. And the only premier I draft was with Seth. And then Alchemy. The Alchemy is only available in premier draft. Oh my God, guys.
Like, oh, there's no Alchemy pick two. Oh,
but
rip.
When I play, so in the lower ranks, so, it, you know, if I decayed and I start in bronze, silver, platinum, my win rate is something like 70, 80%. So theoretically, contender draft should be there. Right. Once we get to mythic, it's going to depend on the set. Right. That's where the win rate starts dropping. Right. And then being able to maintain a 60-65% win rate is going to be rough. Having said that, I don't know if everyone else is going to do that. I don't know. You know, like the way I draft is super conservative. I always, especially with pick two now, I'm always just trying to build solid decks and doing well. This is more of the speculate and swing for the stars because you got a trophy. Right. But I don't know. My trophy rate seems high enough that this should work, but I'm a little scared.
I'm not like Richard, I don't like Vegas.
I don't like high stakes gambling, right? I just want to play Magic the Gathering, you know? And I don't know if this will put people more on tilt. I don't know if people will draft more weirdly because they feel like they need to like max out. Like, I don't know, right?
I kind of feel like it would have an influence on how you would draft because if you just look at the numbers, I feel like in pick two, you're fine with just getting like enough wins to get your entry fee back, which is what, like three wins or something, like whatever that if you
two,
do that
two wins is slightly below break even, like you lose like a tiny bit of gems.
you're kind of fine with that. In this format, because you get nothing for your scrub outs, but such a huge payout for seven wins, I think you optimize to try to get seven wins and take like the higher risk, like draft lines, essentially, to try to maximize your odds of going all the way. Even if it means when things don't work, you're going to scrub out more. Because I think like just the seven win reward is so high. I don't know if I will play this. I might try it just for fun. I do think if they do this, and they are doing this, but one thing I wish they would do is go on the opposite end too and have some sort of low stakes event. Like, I wish they did some sort of like...
That's quick draft.
Is it low stakes? And how? What are the stakes? Like, how much you have to pay to get into quick draft? Like, do you know off the top of your head?
It's like half, right?
Okay.
It's like half of Premier, but the EV is much worse, but you get to play against bots. Oh, by the way, did you know this? I didn't know this, right? But a lot of people who are top rated in Mythic only quick draft.
Right? Really?
Because in quick draft you get to draft against bots, right? And every set there's a way to exploit the bots, right? Like, you know, like, oh, you know, this will always wheel, this is very whatever. So you can always have like a super consistently good deck, and then the rest of it is just outplaying people on the field. But I was shocked to find out that like many of the top ranked people get there purely through quick draft. And I'm like, oh, it makes sense. And I'm watching them draft. I'm like, oh, yeah, that deck is wide open. No wonder their deck is like basically a constructed deck, right? Like, oh, you know, Wizards didn't program the bots to, you know, value this card highly, right? And once you figure that out, and then you play against people that are actually trying to draft, and like the metagame is self-correcting, you get a big advantage. So I didn't know that. But yeah, see the dirty secrets of Magic Arena, Seth, because you play you play the same pool of people, right? So
right,
interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, if you want some high stakes drafting, you can check out the contender drafts. Also, they're dropping Secrets of Strixhaven Alchemy. Richard, have you been drafting with the new alchemy stuff? Has it been fun?
So okay, my Wizard's Shill suit is back on. Okay, for all of you unemployed, perpetually online people, alchemy is the greatest thing you've ever seen. Okay, do you know what my criticism for Universes Beyond is? Not IPs, but when they do Universes Beyond, there's no alchemy set. There was no alchemy turtles. There's no alchemy avatar. There's no alchemy Final Fantasy. Okay? So here's alchemy.
No, dude.
They release a bunch of like broken cards. You go in, you play them, you figure it out, and then you're done. Okay? It's like, think like week one standard. But for alchemy, right? Like, as long as you don't invest your identity to it or something, you're not an alchemy player, right? You play standard or you play draft for a month, it gets stale, then bam, alchemy comes out. There are some truly absurd cards in alchemy, okay? Did you know there's a
yes,
Momir counterspell, Seth?
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious.
That card's actually
right?
pretty sweet. Yeah, that card's
You play
cool.
it for like 2-3 weeks. And then it gets old, and then you're done. And then the next set is out. Perfect, right? And then alchemy is probably not balanced. It's kind of broken. So is standard. Who cares, right? Like, it doesn't matter, right? So I encourage everyone to play alchemy draft. I've been hitting up a lot of alchemy draft. It's a wildly different format, Seth. I think you would
really,
really, really enjoy it. It really takes you off of slop. Like, the alchemy uncommons and rares. and then your slop deck is now just Prismari. Like, Prismari decks are kind of crazy. But it's just very, very fun, right? And it's probably not balanced. It doesn't even matter. You play it for a bit, and then the next set comes out, and then that's good, right? Rather than being like, well, here's Badgermole Cub. Okay, you know, here's a landfall trigger. Am I dead, right? Like, you know, like, you can play that a little bit and then go back to week one meta, right, of, like, the new alchemy cards. The only caveat is it's expensive. So if you are playing Constructed and you need, like, the new Alchemy Rares or Mythics, well, you kind of got to pay for them, right? But if you're just drafting, like, you're serially drafting Secrets of Strixhaven or whatever, and then Alchemy comes out, I really encourage you to draft Alchemy Secrets of Strixhaven. And here's the other thing, Seth. I'm not the only one. Because when I queue up Premier Draft in Mythic, matchmaking has a hard time. I'm playing against like Platinum. I'm playing against Diamond people. Like, they can't find another Mythic person to match me. When I play Alchemy, I'm like, oh, here's the number 200 guy. Here's Mythic 500. Here's Mythic 2000. See, these serially unemployed drafters are also playing Alchemy. Okay, so your contender drafts are safe, Seth. Everyone is on Alchemy. All the top mythic players are doing alchemy.
I will say the idea of alchemy drafts actually kind of appeals to me. Like, I'm still not sold on Alchemy the Constructed format. I don't want my name attached to that one. I mean, maybe it's fun in its
you
own novel kind of way.
You gotta add your identity to something people hate and just play it. Right? It's like something you play and discard. You don't think of yourself as an alchemy player. You don't tell people about it, really. Right?
You gotta go in your room, lock the door, turn off all the lights, pull down your curtain, and then fire up some alchemy.
It's fun. Like, you guys, definitely since you guys love early
action. Uh-oh. I think Richard just froze mid-sentence. Well, that's what he gets for defending alchemy.
Yeah.
The internet knows, Richard. The internet knows that you're saying nice things about alchemy and just could not have it.
Alchemy enjoyer, cut his internet. Cut his mic.
It's done. Get him off stage. So, Richard lost his power in the middle of his pro-alchemy rant, which I still think was probably not a coincidence. You can't publicly support alchemy without something going wrong. So I think Richard is gonna be out for the rest of this podcast, and we're gonna have to finish up. So Krim, would you like to finish Richard's sentence about how good alchemy is?
I want to keep my power.
Me too. Yes.
Also, because I don't know what Richard's high on. You know what I mean? Like, he's high on his own supply right now. I can't imagine alchemy ever being fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could see there being some, like, novelty to it, maybe.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
But, yeah, as far as something I would play regularly, it's just not really my thing. So let's move on. I want to bring up Crimp. So they had Hasbro's quarter one earnings came out last week.
Sure.
So every quarter they got to publish all their stuff. The money stuff, whatever, it's always usually kind of the same, which is Wizards doing great, up 26% compared to last year. Consumer products staying flat. Entertainment dropping. That's pretty much how it always looks. Magic killing it like usual. But we did get a couple interesting nuggets from the earnings report. So here's a couple of things that stood out to me. So first, Secrets of Strixhaven, best-selling in-universe set ever in the history of the game, topping Lorwyn Eclipse, which was the best-selling in-universe set ever from just a few months before. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they asked about that set, and they said it beat internal expectations, which not as high praise as best-selling set ever, but I guess I don't really know what that means. I guess if you expected it to be the worst set ever and it was the second to worst set ever, you beat expectations. So I don't know. Sounds like corporate talk to me. We also learned Pioneer is coming back next year.
Yes.
And that Marvel spoilers start next Tuesday, officially, is the start of Marvel spoilers. So, Krim, what do you make of this? What do you think about SOS being the best-selling set of all time? Should we just expect every new set to be the new best-selling set because the game is just growing so much now?
Kind of, yeah, right? Like, that's mainly the thing. I feel like nowadays it's not surprising when Magic as a game has grown so much, right? So I assume we'll be getting more of those. And on top of that, I guess people like their magical schools. So, yeah. Like, I have never been a huge fan of, like, the magical school worlds, no matter where it is. And so, like, except for Strange Academy, that's the only one. But I don't know. I guess it's the right mixture of playing, giving people a school to align with. On top of that, Magic as a game has grown. So, anything that allows kind of like factions within a set is always going to be fun. So yeah, not surprised.
I think this set, it was definitely a solid set. And I liked Lorwyn Eclipse too, even though I like Secrets of Strixhaven, I think better than Lorwyn Eclipse overall, although I liked both of those sets. But I do, for me, it kind of reminds me of the stock market. I don't know if you follow the stock market at all, but like they'll always be talking about, oh, the stock market, it's at a new all-time high. And it's one of those things where like, if it's not constantly like going up and getting better, then things have kind of like gone wrong. And I feel like that's the position that Magic's in, where things are just like snowballing right now in such a positive direction, where you have so many new players coming into the game because of Universes Beyond or other reasons, that if a set is not like threatening to be the new best-selling set ever, that to me would probably be a sign that that set wasn't very good. So I'm expecting when we go to Reality Fracture, that probably should beat Secrets of Strixhaven and be the new best-selling set of all time, which is kind of an exciting place to be, right? To think of just, like, how fast the game is growing right now and just, like, how much it's going mainstream right now compared to where it was before. I went, oh, my God, Krim, like, I went to a gas station the other day. There was some random dude working in the gas station, and it was he was working behind the counter, and he was like, oh, dude, are you the dude that opened a bunch of Magic cards and lost a whole bunch of money in a video? I was like, yeah, that's me, buddy. I'm the guy lost all the money opening that Magic collection. Yep. But, like, that's not something that happens to me in the middle of rural upstate New York. People don't just randomly know who I am or know about Magic. So I think it's just, like, a sign that, like, how mainstream Magic is now, that random people are just like, well, I saw the video of you opening that Magic collection, which is kind of cool.
That's just the case, right? Like, I feel like Magic has grown so much now that I guess for all the people that have been in the game for so long, like, now it's just like, oh, you're the guy, you're the internet guy. I've definitely gotten stuff like, you do stuff on YouTube, don't you? I'm like,
yep,
I guess, yeah, sure, yeah. How you doing? Hi. It's still jarring. Like, it's a bad thing. It's just very jarring, right? Like, oh, yes, I do.
It's actually kind of scary. I've always felt like being, like, a real celebrity, the kind of like a movie star or something, where you just, like, walk out your door and paparazzi and people mobbing you, that would suck. Like, hopefully Magic doesn't get that big, because I think that would actually be a miserable life to live.
I feel like at the end of the day, you could only, as a YouTuber, be so big. Like, even if it got to the point where people stop you randomly, right? Like, it's not that bad, right? Because I don't think we'll ever get
could
to
ever
the level.
Get to the point where it was like, yeah, too.
Yeah,
crazy.
like it's not like if the Beatles were walking around or something like that, right? Like, and then people are just like jumping to, like, say hi. I don't think it'll ever be like that, right?
Yeah, no, I that seems pretty unlikely. But what do you think about Pioneer coming back, Krim? How much? I saw people get really excited. I had people coming into my stream being like, oh, dude, Pioneer's coming back. It's going to be awesome. And my initial take was like, let's take a deep breath. Like, yes, I'm glad they're saying Pioneer's coming back, but we don't know what this means right now. Are we getting, like, Pioneer Pro Tours, qualifier seasons? Is it going to be, like, I don't know, one random thing and that counts as Pioneer being back? Like, how excited are you for Pioneer? And what do you think this means, Krim? Should we be expecting, like, a Pioneer Pro Tour next turn? Is that what coming back means, you think?
I'd like to hope so. Because this was a format that was once loved and thought about all the time, right? So I kind of hope we keep getting more support for this format. And I myself got excited with this announcement. I went back and started playing Pioneer just to see where it's at, right?
Because you can see it on the YouTube. Krim's posting some Pioneer videos.
I had to do it, right? Because I was like, oh, everybody's talking about how fair it is and all of that. So I checked it out, and dude, it really is. If people are playing Collected Company, this is probably a format that's very fair. Right? Like, it's sure, it's Badger Mole Cup, but, like, this format, you have all the answers. You have, you know, I mean, like, I'm not seeing as much Lotus Field nonsense. Of course, I am running into, like, Nyx, whatever, the Superland Journey. Not Journey to Nyx, that's the set. I can never remember.
Nykthos,
right?
Nykthos, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. With, like, the mono green, like, all the things you'd see in there, like Cavaliers and the Troll that attaches itself to a land. So lots and lots of big mana decks as well, but none of them are doing anything that seems unbeatable. There's nothing, and, like, I'm getting paired against a lot of control decks, and I'm winning with just mono black midrange, Unholy Annex, and Tragedy Feaster. Like,
That is about as fair as it gets. So you've been enjoying Pioneer then? It's been pretty fun.
I haven't seen anything to tell me that I wouldn't have fun otherwise, right? Because, like, right now I'm digging it. It's a lot of freaking fun. And maybe because, you know, again, the limelight's kind of been off of it. So, like, the people that are still playing are the mid-range faithful, and that's why. But I mean, as the Pro Tour comes back, if it gets a Pro Tour, I mean, like, if it gets any special competitive events, I am curious to see what it looks like then when the pros try to break the format.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It might end up being broken at some point in the future, but it's nice that it's going well now, and I'm glad it's coming back next year. I think worst case, we probably get some Arena Championship-style stuff. Like, that seems like an easy way since it's on Arena, but I wouldn't be surprised if we had, like, a Pioneer Pro Tour or at least, like, something close by, Pioneer Spotlight Series event, some, like, bone to the Pioneer community, which was just missing this year. So I think that's very good news for Pioneer and for Pioneer players. I've been playing Little Modern since the bannings, and I've actually kind of really enjoyed that, which I was not expecting to enjoy Modern, but so I might be becoming a Modern player again, which has kind of caught me by surprise. But anyway, I gotta ask you about this, Krim. This cracked me up. Okay. So we got a spoiler, kind of like an accidental spoiler. It's Captain Kirk boldly going. It's from the Star Trek set. It looks like it was spoiled at a con of some kind. It's like one of the oversized cards on a stand. The card itself, it's a Bant 4-mana 3/4, human artificer with vigilance. Spacecraft creatures you control get +3/+3 until end of turn. Whenever Captain Kirk enters or attacks, you can search your library graveyard for a basic lander or card named Starship Enterprise. Reveal it, put it in your hand. If you search your library, you got to shuffle. So that's the card. He looks like he's kind of taking a dump, honestly, in the art. That's kind of the first thing. He looks like he's kind of settling onto kind of a toilet. And someone noticed this, and they tagged William Shatner with the card. It was like, hey, I'm a huge fan of you. I'm curious, have you seen your card that's in the upcoming game? So William Shatner says, I know nothing about it. I do hope it's a real at Wizards Magic deck, though they should redo the card, as he looks like he didn't have his at Kellogg's US # Raisin Brand that morning, and will have some trouble boldly going with a toilet emoji, a wink emoji, and a laughing face emoji.
I can't believe he got a Kellogg's Raisin Brand ad into this post.
He got his sponsorship read in there somehow. Yeah, responding to his Magic card. He somehow got a shout out to his sponsor in there.
I have not heard of Raisin Brand in decades, Seth. When was the last time you heard Raisin Brand?
Probably from my great-grandmother or something. I guess Shatner is like 93 or something. So it's probably from his generation that Raisin Brand was like a thing. But no, I forgot Raisin Brand still existed. What do you think of this card, Grim? Like, what do you make of this? This appears to be a commander card. Because it's TRC. So that would confirm that there's commander decks. Are you excited at all for this card? Like, it's hard for me to imagine giving spacecraft creatures +3/+3 being that good with the Edge of Eternity spacecraft. Maybe we're going to get, like, cheaper or easier to turn on spacecraft. If you got to, like, station them and then turn them on, it seems very, very hard to make Captain Kirk good. But, like, what do you think of the card itself?
I mean, it all comes down to what spacecrafts look like.
Yeah.
And what the Enterprise does, right? Because you get to look for a basic land or the Enterprise.
Or the Enterprise,
whenever he enters or attacks. I think that could be cool, right? But it's not like putting the land into play. It's putting the land into hand and the Enterprise. So it all comes down to what did they do since Edge of Eternities to make spacecrafts better, right? Because spacecrafts, I feel like the first time and the whole act of stationing was played very, very safe. Right. And I get it. Like, you probably at some point have to try to make this mechanic feel different, at least with spacecrafts, feel different than just crew. So, and it's a slightly more permanent crewing. So I'm curious to see how it plays right now. Look, I'm not a Trekkie, so I don't know anything about Star Trek.
Me either.
And the worst part is the only thing I know about Star Trek is what the entire Trekkie community has, like, tried to not know or forget about, which is, like, the J.J. Abrams movies. And those are the ones that I saw. And so I don't know anything flavor-wise. I know that they are constantly doing, like, space exploration and learning about life in space. So that's cool. And this is a card. It all comes down to spacecrafts.
Yeah, Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. It's so hard to judge based on having no context about the set. I do think that probably the spacecraft is the commander of the deck, and this is one of the backup commanders, which is kind of interesting. That would be my guess, but I think we're going to see the spacecraft be the actual commander of the deck. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. The card itself, we need more information. I don't think it would be good with the Edge of Eternity spacecraft, but there's a lot of ways you can make spacecraft, and I'm not convinced they're going to be exactly the same as an Edge of Eternity. So this card might actually be really good with whatever spacecraft we get from the set, or with Starship Enterprise. I know my Trek over here. One last thing, Krim. I got to ask you. So I was watching the Arena Championship this weekend.
Okay.
It was historic, and historic actually looked super good. Like, it was very diverse, and they had tons of cool decks. So historic looked better than I thought. But this one situation came up, and I wanted to see what you would do in this situation. So Arn Hushenbeth was playing in the top 16 elimination game, lost round number one, or lost game number one of the match, was 99%, he says, to win game number two of the match to force a game three. But then the internet went out, Arena would not let him log back in time, and ended up losing by default, essentially, for not being there. And one thing that he said was that his opponent had the option to let them play game three, but chose not to play out game three and just to take the win. So do you think the opponent, like, should have played out game three? Like, what would you have done in this situation, Krim? Like, you're in the top eight of a very high EV event. Do you accept the win from your opponent's internet going out, or do you say, let's play game three anyway, even though you have a free win in advancing to the top eight staring right in front of you?
That's brutal, right?
That's tough. It's so tough.
I can understand why the opponent didn't, right? Like, the opponent's like, hey, I got my win. That's all that matters, right? Like, I'm trying to win. You're trying to win. I shouldn't take into account, you know, like anything, as long as it's within like the legal like world of like.
I guess the rules of the tournament are, if you disconnect, it's on you and you lose. So the opponent didn't do anything against the rules. The rules were he could just accept the win there if he wanted to, or they could.
Correct. In that sense, the opponent did nothing wrong. And what? But I have to feel a little. I had to have to feel a little bit grimy taking that W, right?
It's so, yeah. I feel like it's one of those ones, like, given the context of being, like, a super competitive event, I could see how someone would do it and then feel kind of dirty about it. I would like to think that I would just be the same I would on, like, just playing a Moto League or something, where if something like that happens, I will try to, like, make it right and, like, play the match to what its conclusion should have been. I would like to think that that's what I would do, but I don't know. Like, when you get the world's invite and tens of thousands of dollars and you're like, oh, I get the free win, like, would I think differently being in that situation? I might. Maybe I'm just like, hey, the rules say that you lost. I'm just going to take the win. I know it sucks, but sorry, buddy. Like, I wish there was a way to solve it, but I guess that's just the nature of tournaments online, is like, just like our podcast today, halfway through Richard's power went off. Like, that could happen in the middle of an Arena Championship, right? Like, what can you do? Like, I guess it's just a low roll if that happens to you.
Yeah. And it feels bad, but like, well, what else can you really do though? Right. Like, I mean, the tournament, first off, if it's a tournament that has coverage, they definitely have to keep the show going. Right. And then on top of that, if you are, it feels bad to say it, but I think I'd probably lean in the direction of the opponent, right? Like, I won.
Yeah.
I'm playing for Worlds. I'm not here to, like, you know what I mean? Like, you want to preserve competitive integrity, but like,
and
your internet died.
And I would also feel, from the opponent's perspective, the fact that I was up a game would make me in some ways feel better about it. Like, because I'd be like, oh, technically it's 1-0 right now. Like, I won game one. We never got to finish game two. So that, like, maybe that's just coping to feel less guilty about it. That might just be coping. But I could see how that could be a reasonable justification too. Like, I kind of won 1-0. So I would have won if we, like, went to time and paper. I would have won this match anyway. And this is kind of the weird equivalent, the internet version of that. But yeah, interesting moral situation. Let me know in the comments what you would do. Would you have taken the win, or would you have played out game three, even though you didn't have to? Curious what other people would do in that situation. But Anyway, I think that's all we got time for in our podcast for today. So, Kremen, I guess in the past, Richard, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone
wherever
for listening.
You are, Richard.
Yeah, Richard, hopefully you're doing all right with no power, whatever you're doing. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of magic. So until then, have a lovely week, everyone. And this is Crew signing out.